A couple of weeks ago, I took a harvest service out at Castle Camps. It wasn't a church service, it was sort of in a community centre, you know, where you're sitting there and everybody's there ready for the harvest, things to celebrate. And I'd just been reading about a terrible drought that has crossed over my country. And I know what it means because I've been there in droughts and I've seen the heartache and I've seen it. You know, you guys, who's seen this kind of thing where animals are just skin and bone staggering around? No, you haven't seen it. You've seen the looks on the farmers' faces trying to cope with it and then seeing the looks on the families of those that haven't coped. I thought, we always at harvest time, we have such a jolly time, don't we, with all those lovely, pretty tasty things sitting up, not the vegetables for kids. I know they're not tasty, but you know, when you get older, they're tasty. And I thought, we're talking about harvest. We've got to talk about what happens when the harvest fails. And it got me thinking about, where's God when things go wrong? Where's God when the harvest fails as it can in many parts of our lives? You face something that's really difficult. Where's God in that? Some people, and they're really, really wrong, think that when things go bad, it means God's not there. Some people think when they do things bad, God's not there. But our Christian faith says, in fact, God is right there with us in those times when we do the silly things. And our Christian faith tells us that God walks with us through the difficult times, holds us. You know that footprints thing down in the cafe? That when there's only one set of footprints in the sand, God's actually carrying us? So I wanted to think today about this reality, that God is with us in the very, very difficult times. And that's where we're going today.
Mark chapter 10. Verses 46, starts on verse 46. They came to Jericho. As he and his disciples and a large crowd were leaving Jericho, Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting by the roadside. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout out and say, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Many sternly ordered him to be quiet, but he cried out even more loudly, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stood still and said, "Call him here." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart, get up, he is calling you." So throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. Then Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" The blind man said to him, "My teacher, let me see again." Jesus said to him, "Go, your faith has made you well." Immediately he regained his sight and followed him on the way. Thanks be to God.
One of the best known stories, of course, Bartimaeus, which actually means son of Timaeus, or Timothy as we often translate it in our English. If only it was so simple. If only we could just touch people and pray for them and they'd be fixed. Life would be so much better, wouldn't it? Except, of course, that to have birth, we have to have death. Or in a matter of weeks, the earth would be disastrously overpopulated. We already have this problem, don't we? With around 360,000 births every day and around half of that number of deaths every day. And so the population on this planet is multiplying at an alarming, escalating rate that is scaring the pants off every ecologist that knows anything about it. The planet is bearing consequences and it's a massive problem we're facing. Well, okay, what if we could just dispense with suffering? What if we could just take it away with a prayer or a touch like Jesus did there? But at what point? The feeling of pain from heat teaches me not to put my fingers on that place where it's hot. People with leprosy lose limbs because they lose the sensations at the nerve ends and they don't know when they're doing damage to their limbs. Without the pain, there's no awareness of the damage that's happening. We can't live without pain or death. They're a reality of life. We only appreciate health because we know that sickness is always a possibility. And often we appreciate health because we've been through some place where we weren't healthy and we say, oh, it's so nice to be well again. We learn to adjust and improve our social behaviour, don't we? Because we learn that some behaviours cause pain. And we adjust by experiencing the pain of doing things wrong. Okay, so some pain is helpful. Some pain is creative. Some pain is good for us. What about crippling pain? What about when pain becomes emotionally and physically and lethally crippling? What about when it robs you of freedom and of sight and of hearing and of mobility? We're afraid of pain and suffering because we fear that it has the power to define us. But God's presence in our suffering means that our suffering, our fear, our shame do not have the power to name who we are. God's love names us as infinitely precious persons right in the midst of our vulnerability. I want to think about suffering today. And I want to think about how we recognise God's image and God's likeness in people who are going through really hard times. Now, some of the greatest wisdom that we've got in this world has come from people who've been through prolonged periods of trauma and harm. Some of the most painful moments in my life, and probably in yours, have been the most important. And often development has happened in these that could never have happened without them. Bit of old homespun Victorian logic and wisdom used to say, well, son, the lessons you learn the hardest are the ones you learn the best. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, in his Letters and Papers from Prison, writes this: time is the most precious gift in our possession, for it is the most irrevocable. Time lost is time we have not lived. Time left empty. The past 10 years, he's writing from prison, the past 10 years have not been like that. Our losses have been immeasurable, but we have not lost time. Time is lost when we have not lived a full human life. Time unenriched by experience, creative endeavour, enjoyment and suffering. An extraordinary thing to say. You see where he's put suffering? He's valued suffering as a part of enriched living alongside of enjoyment and creative endeavour and experience. Those things which are about living a full human life. Why and how? This from the man who for 2 years was held a captive in a Gestapo cell facing execution daily. And he writes, during recent years we've come to know death at close quarters. And Dietrich is not speaking out of some academic high tower and intellectual sanctuary, but out of what he's learned as a condemned and suffering man of faith, battling a terrible and a great evil that, to all evidence, has left him utterly powerless. And he writes from his Gestapo cell in May 1943, "I can't help but think of that lovely song of Hugo Wolf, which we sang a number of times recently. Overnight come joy and sorrow, both are gone before tomorrow. Back to God to let him know how you've borne them here below." And Dietrich writes, "It all turns upon that how you've borne them here below. Far more than anything else that happens to you from outside." And I remember my brother Greg saying to me when he was facing imminent death, both from Parkinson's and cancer, a cacophony of things that had sort of come together in his body. And he was saying to me, "Mate, it's 20% circumstance and 80% attitude." And this is far more than just being tough and having a positive view of everything. It's not merely the hole or the donut or the glass half full or half empty. In his foreword to Man's Search for Meaning, Rabbi Harold Kushner wrote, "The greatest task for any person is to find meaning in his or her life." Now, Viktor Frankl proposed three possible sources for meaning. In work, that's doing something significant. In love, caring for another person. And in courage during difficult times. In work, in love, and in courage during difficult times. Suffering in and of itself is meaningless. We give our struggles meaning by the way that we respond to them. St. Paul said that nothing in all creation can separate us from the love of God, which is ours in Christ Jesus. Christ Jesus, who suffered and died for us. Forces beyond your control can take away everything you possess, except this: your inalienable right to know yourself as a named and loved child of God, and your freedom to choose how you will respond to the situations that confront you. You cannot define and control what's going to happen to you in your life, but you can always affect what you will feel and do about it when it happens to you. Etty Hillerson, she's a young Jewish woman, died at Auschwitz, one of millions. She shared this in one of her journals. "More arrests, more terror, concentration camps, the arbitrary dragging off of fathers, sisters, brothers. We seek the meaning of life, wondering whether any meaning can be left. But that is something each one of us must settle with himself and with God. And perhaps life has its own meaning, even if it takes a lifetime to find it." On June the 15th, the next day, she writes, "For a moment yesterday, I thought I couldn't go on living, that I needed help. Life and suffering had lost their meaning for me. I felt I was about to collapse under a tremendous weight. I said that I confronted the suffering of mankind, but that wasn't really what it was. Rather, I feel like a small battlefield in which the problems, or some of the problems of our time, are being fought out, and all one can hope to do is keep oneself humbly available to allow oneself to be a battlefield." Hillerson came to understand that we are called to be both the agony and the ecstasy of God for the life of the world. Henri Nouwen writes, sufferings can only be dealt with creatively when they're understood as wounds integral to our human condition. And maybe that's why deep communion and compassion are enabled much more by shared pain than by shared pleasure. Jesus told Peter, you must be ground like wheat, and once you've recovered, then you can turn and help your brothers. In general, you can lead people on a spiritual journey about as far as you've gone yourself. Transform people, transform people. When you can be healed yourself, and not just talking about healing. You are, as Henri Nouwen said, a wounded healer, which is probably the only kind there is. Social psychologist Dermot Mertu writes, creation cannot survive, and less so thrive, without its dark side. There is a quality of destruction, decay, and death that is essential to creation's flourishing. And the consequence of this destructive dimension is what we call evil, pain and suffering. I'm not suggesting fatalistic acquiescence. I'm arguing for the very opposite, an enduring sense of hope, which it seems to me is not possible without first coming to terms with the great paradox. It is the unfolding cycle of birth, death, rebirth, and it transpires all over creation, on the macro and on the micro scales alike. A man I regard as a great writer and theologian, Richard Rohr, writes, for me to be a Christian means to accept that battlefield, to accept and to somehow participate in the mystery of death and resurrection in oneself, in the universe. It's a process of oneing with reality, what we call at-one-ment or atonement. We see it on the cross. We know God is a part of it for us. Again, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, reflecting on that great cry of dereliction from the cross where Jesus cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? And Dietrich writes of that, O wondrous change! Those hands once so strong and active have now been bound. Helpless and forlorn, you see the end of your deed. And yet with a sigh of relief you resign your cause to a stronger hand and are content to do so. For one brief moment you enjoyed the bliss of freedom only to give it back to God that he may perfect it in glory. We need to remember that we are held in a stronger hand than anything our bodies or our minds can manufacture. And in our abandonment to Christ, we with him have already passed from death to life. I remember my brother Greg telling me when he was dying, mate, I'm already healed. It's just that my body doesn't know it.